Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Alrighty, third hour here on the show. Final hour of the week. Tiki and Tierney are rolling at home. Coming to you from our Rocket Mortgage studio. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Extra special Friday show as we celebrate 4 years together on the tube. Tiki and I have been together much longer than that, but Since we got the elevation to the Simulcast 4 years ago, which obviously opens up a lot of different doors and a totally different look, it's been great. And as you can tell, we got the balloons. You know, TV really went out of their way and coming back from breaks. And I'm starting to see snippets now. You know, It's not synced up time wise, but you're starting to see really the depth of what they did and how they went out of their way and, you know, reached out to people, had people send videos. I watched Santhers. Santhers was really good. I just saw D-Cells. Really appreciate that. I saw you and your beautiful family, Teak. Little kiddo sitting on the couch. Oh, my God. They're getting big, man. That'll tell you. When we started, we were childless.
Yes.
Yeah, we
you
got
were.
Two in there.
You were. I had a few at the
small army. You know, I know. Oh my God! But it's been awesome. So thank you again to everybody. I know Marlo has done a lot of this. Marcy has done a lot of this. But there's so many names. I know you mentioned a lot of the names. I saw yours as well, which was awesome. When you do this, you're gonna miss some names, and that's my greatest fear. So in one big swooping broad swath here. Thanks to everybody. Seriously, thank you very much. It's been awesome. Really enjoyed the day so far, and we'll keep the train moving here. So the transfer portal, all right, is stacked. There's about, I think it's up to 1,200 names in college basketball.
Yep.
Now, just because you put your name in, I know that most people know this. I'm not sure if everybody does. So we should probably, at least on the most rudimentary level,
clarify this.
Kind of clarify this. Just because you put your name in the portal, right? You have to alert a compliance, the compliance officer at the school that you're currently at. They put it in the portal. I guess they do it for you. And then every coach has access. So as they've got to restructure their roster, they've got two kids leaving, a point guard, a big man. They basically search the portal like it's a free agent list. And then the head recruiter, the head coach, depending upon the level of intrigue and interest, they reach out. You know, maybe there's previously recruited. A lot of that certainly happens. Previously recruited the kid, AAU connections. There's everybody knows everybody in today's college world. But just because you have a communication doesn't mean that you're going to get necessarily offered a scholarship, nor does it mean that you cannot return to the school in which you were investigating leaving. Now, if you put your name in the portal, a coach might say, you know what? Okay, we're going to move on because we're not going to wait for you to make your decision. And if you're not sure about us, that now makes us not sure about you. We're moving on. We wish you well. Move on. That's the very nuts and bolts, basic stuff.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of – I mean, every day I see Rothstein people I follow, so-and-so going here, so-and-so committing here. It's crazy out there.
Look, there's a lot of depth to this. There's a lot of confusion to this, and there's a lot of uncertainty for people, kids, players in this regard. Now, just to talk about this in its broad terms, the Division I Council for D1 and D2 sports, finally, because it's been long sought after and long discussed, finally approved a one-time transfer rule or law regulation without having to sit out a year and losing a year of eligibility. That's the big thing. Every other college sport, except for football, baseball, men's hockey, I think women's hockey could do it, but men's hockey and basketball, every other sport could transfer and not have the penalty.
Correct.
Those were the only ones that did. Now they don't have that penalty. And it's created a little bit of a free-for-all. To be honest, I think this is why we saw so many kids entering the transfer portal this year. I'll be more interested to see what happens next year, BT, after this is already settled. Kids entered because they knew that this was going to come down. So as you mentioned, there's about 1,200 basketball players in the transfer portal. Apparently, and this is an unverified number, there's like 2,000 football players in the transfer portal, which is obviously is equally problematic. And I was listening or reading to some Mac Jones, head coach of North Carolina, comments, and he said, from what he's heard, 37% of them have someplace to go. 37%. The rest do not. And so that creates a situation exactly as you described. Hey, coach, I'm sorry. I mean, I know I wanted to leave, but I got to come back, right? Mm-hmm. And make sure that coach didn't move on from you type of situation. But I think there's a bigger issue, a downstream issue that it bothers me a little bit, only because I have a kid in this situation, talking about Chasen, my soon-to-be senior up at Greenwich High School. Their senior season or junior season was wiped out. They had no COVID season. He didn't play as a sophomore, so he basically didn't play as a junior. He just had 7-on-7 tape. So his only chance to win, I'll put that in quotes, win a scholarship is through his senior season, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's not getting heavily recruited because he hasn't played a lot. Yeah. He was set to start last year opposite his brother. They didn't play. And so when I think about scholarship opportunities, it makes you go look at the numbers. Here are the numbers. 1 million kids play high school football. Let's say half of them just do other sports, play lacrosse or soccer or whatever. They're not going to even try to get a football scholarship, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say another half of that is just – they're just not good enough to get college scholarships. Not knocking them. They could be great scientists or whatever.
It is what it is.
So let's say there's 250,000 kids available for scholarships. You know how many scholarships are each year for the D1 and D2? 19,500. And now what could happen because of the transfer portal – And these kids that are trying to move schools that have already been vetted, that have already got a year of college, now coaches are starting to reserve scholarships. They get 25 each year, 85 in total. They're starting to reserve scholarships, not offer them to high school kids, and save them for kids coming in the transfer portal. Yeah. And that's a humongous disservice to high school kids who worked their butts off, and some of them had no chance to even work their butt off this past season because of the pandemic, to try to get a scholarship, and now they're being usurped by some kid who wants to leave a previous existing situation.
You know, it's messy. I don't like transferring within the conference, but I'm not going to go nuts over that. I still believe while player movement is paramount, if a coach could pick up and he could go and get $3 million more at university, why, then the player's got to have the same freedom. But I would say the same thing about a coach. I would not want a coach, you know, going within the ACC or the Big Ten or the Big 12 or the Big or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't like that for a player. I would still, if you asked me, I would still say within the conference you should sit out a year. But I'm not even here to fight that battle because I want the kids to have the ability to do what they need to do. But an unintended consequence of all these cancellations, right?
Yep.
Chasen's one of them. You think there's player volatility now, all right? Think about how many kids did not get properly scouted as juniors and seniors, which means they were either under-recruited or in some cases even over-recruited.
That's right.
Maybe the first time was a great impression. You didn't have a chance to watch the kid play 2-3 more times. You give him a scholarship offer. He takes it. He gets to campus. You're like, I must have seen the kid on his best day. He's okay, but he's not really what I thought he was.
That's a good point.
It's the way it goes.
You're
right. So now that player is going to feel the heat because he's not going to play, and he's going to want to bounce. Conversely,
and now he can do it.
And now he can do it, which is great. Conversely, somebody like Chasen, who has been under-recruited based on the pandemic, and he's a big kid, different skill set than your other son, but a big boy who's playing college football somewhere, and he's smart as well. You know, he might get to a situation where in 2 years he might just blossom.
Yeah.
And he might be at a school that is great academically and solid football, but he might look around and say, I'm much better than this.
Yeah, I should be playing in the SEC.
And he might want to transfer too.
Yeah, I should be playing in the SEC or Big Ten or whatever the heck.
Or your old conference.
Or ACC. You're right.
You know,
you never know. And so, yeah, that could happen. You know, and so I'm of mixed emotions about this, BT, because for the longest time, I've thought that this is the right of these kids. So if it's just a bad situation, and again, like you mentioned, the coach leaves or they over-recruited your position. So you walk in and there's eight guys in the say running back room, and you have no chance unless you beat them out, and it's unlikely because you get favoritism. It just doesn't work. Like, it's not really meritocracy. Mm-hmm. And so you just feel like you want to leave and try someplace else. I think you should have the right to do that. But the consequences are significant. One, there's an academic toll on credits. Right?
Yep.
It's just going to happen.
You're going to lose at least 18, 24. Minimally, you're losing a ton of trade.
They don't transfer, right? Period.
Yep.
So you shorten your opportunity to graduate on time.
Yep.
Because those credits don't transfer. Also, and we've talked about this a lot, BT, you're almost teaching kids that, yeah, the going gets tough, bounce.
That's what I hate.
Right?
Instead of the going gets tough,
work harder.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's how you and I were taught. You get hurt, you come figure it out, come back from it, right?
Yep.
You get beat out, work harder. Do whatever it takes to find your chance to excel. Don't just bounce, right? Don't shy away from competition, because that's not going to get you anywhere, certainly not in sports, but not in life either. Mm-hmm. And so there's a couple of things that make me now pause a little bit as I think about the long-term effect of this.
But here's the problem, though. I fundamentally, what you just said is what, you know, I know you do the same thing. Kinsey's only four, so you teach this, but the depth of the teaching is a little different when you're still only four, my daughter.
Yeah.
And even with my son, who's six, I mean, you certainly begin to plant these seeds, and you know, you say something, then it'll be like restated. You're like, wow, that actually stuck, and now you see, okay, I can go a little bit more. I can implement a little bit more philosophically what we expect in the household, right? And I don't mean chores; I mean like real like work ethic and substantive stuff like that. But like, to me, while you are absolutely right what you just said, there's a million examples. Russell Wilson transferred.
Yeah,
one of the best players in the NFL.
But he was a graduate transfer, though.
I understand that.
And his circumstance was mitigating.
Look at Mac McClung. That's a name that just popped in my head.
Yeah.
Started at Georgetown.
Yep.
Went to Texas Tech.
Yeah.
I mean, now he's going to enter the NBA draft. And he's also in the portal. So,
yeah.
And he's going to get drafted because he's a beast. I'm nice. Not going top 10.
Yeah.
I think he's going first round. Mac McClung is a baller. So he's bounced around. Where's the penalty? And thankfully, there is none. But
no.
That gives a kid maybe an inaccurate depiction of what could be in store for them.
Yeah.
I mean, Mac McClung's going to be a pro. He's kind of special. Not most of us, including me, are not special.
Yeah. It's interesting.
You know?
It's interesting you bring up Russell. He was not a graduate transfer, correct?
He wasn't a graduate transfer.
He was not.
Not
was,
to my knowledge.
No, I don't think he was either.
I don't think he was.
But
if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I do not think that he was.
But when he was at NC State, and I know this because I know his coach well, Tom O'Brien, he was my offensive coordinator at UVA.
Yep.
Tom O'Brien was like, you're playing baseball over my dead body. Right. And so Russell wanted to be a two-sport athlete.
Yep.
And so it just was it was an untenable.
This was at NC State, right?
This was at NC State. It was an untenable situation because he had in his mind what he wanted his collegiate athletic experience to be like.
Yep.
I want to play football. I want to play baseball. I don't know which one I'm ultimately going to do. And be honest with you, at NC State, he was not a NFL quality quarterback. Like, nobody was looking at him at NC State saying, oh yeah, that guy's going to be fantastic. Mm-hmm. He went to Wisconsin and balled out, right? And had a fantastic year, which is why he got drafted in the fourth round. And then ultimately set himself up to win that starting job. And mm-hmm. and now look where he is. And so his situation is unique. It's hard to point to that one and say,
I'm just pulling names out, but
I agree.
Sure, I can construct more foolproof
list.
But
your point is right. People will use him as an example.
Uh-huh.
They'll say, well, look at Russell Wilson. He was at NC State. It wasn't the right, you know, they'll think it was a football thing. It really wasn't a football thing. And so he transferred to Wisconsin, and it made him into a star. But
mm-hmm.
that it's so nuanced, each and each one of these.
Oh, there's no
which
question.
Is why kids have to have the right to do it. But I just think the unintended consequences are going to continue to expand. We've identified a few of them. Mm-hmm. I think there are probably a lot more.
Let me give, since it's baseball season, you gave some numbers on football. Let me give you some numbers on my sport, okay? Mm-hmm. A lot of parents driving around now, and we all have games tomorrow, opening day tomorrow, by the way, Teak.
Oh,
opening
nice.
Day for the little guy,
your
opening
boys,
day.
Your boy's ready?
Oh, is he ready? He's jacked up. Is he nice. Ready? Ready to go yard. He's ready. Been ready for 2 weeks. He's ready. Now, dad, the coach is ready, too. I can't wait.
Nice.
So point is, everybody's playing Little League tomorrow, right? So when you start to play, especially at the lowest level of Little League, almost not all dads, but many dads have these, and moms have these visions of, you know, mm-hmm. what my son or daughter can be on a certain field. And, you know, you start to see dollar signs, not necessarily in the pro, from a pro point of view, but hey, you know what? Maybe I can get a scholarship and save 40,000. And that's not a bad thing to try to pursue.
No. Now, dude, every parent should try to do that. Seriously.
And we are. You just better make sure you have the 529 plan and just in case.
Have a backup plan.
And here's why you better have the backup plan. That's why I prefaced everything with this. In the last study that I had a couple of years ago, they do it every few years, there were roughly 492,000 high school baseball players in America. So we'll go 500,000, make it a whole number. Easier. 500 of the 500,000, there were just 52,000 who played college baseball, which is about 9% of the high school players went on to compete at the collegiate level. Mm. However, less than 2% of the initial 500,000 went to Division I. You're not getting, you might get academic money disguised as something else at D3 and D2. Yeah. You're not getting baseball money at those schools. Maybe some of the powerhouse, like University of Tampa, mm-hmm. some power division. I mean, some of these, they would have railroaded us and we were D1. Some of these D2 programs down south and out west are insane. And I'm sure they're getting some money. And the JUCOs are really good. But in large part, trust me, D3, you know this. D2, D3, get nothing. Now, that's just for baseball. Baseball, I think it's changed a little bit. When I was in college, I think the number was 12 scholarships mm-hmm. that the school can then divvy however they want. They could go 24 halves. They could do whatever they want, right? So basically, on my roster, 25 of us, only about, because Mark rightfully so had a full ride, I would say 11, maybe 12 had money, mm-hmm. all right? So 2%. Less than 2% of 500,000 high school players will get a scholarship for baseball. So we've got to reprioritize parents, not kids. Reach for the moon. Think you're going to be the next Trout, the next Acuna. That's what being young is for. But as parents, we need to guide them properly and not obscure the finish line here.
Yeah.
Not get so wrapped up in our own, you know, failures as players and we want more or whatever it might be. The numbers are the numbers and the numbers are daunting. A lot of you who think your kids are playing college, they're not.
Yeah.
They're just not.
You're right.
And it's sad.
Chris Collinsworth's line?
What
if if the other parents aren't complaining about your kid, he probably doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, you say that. No, you got that from him because you say that a lot too.
I do. It's true though.
No, I hear you, especially in football or basketball.
Definitely in football.
Baseball's different.
Baseball is very different.
You know, just don't know. You could be in the third grade, right, and you could be out in right field picking daisies, and you're a lefty, and you can't hit. But then somehow something clicks as a pitcher, and you're the ace of the high school team. You're throwing 89, 88, 89, 90, and you're doing your thing, and maybe you get a few bucks for college, if not more. You know, but nobody's afraid of that kid. But in football, I mean, if there's a kid out there who's 30 pounds heavier, who looks like Bo Jackson, all the moms and dads, when they get near their son or daughter, they're like, whoa, stay away from them. I get it. Listen, the numbers are sobering. They are what they are. The transfer portal is messy. But it's another avenue to try to find what's right for the student-athlete. You just hope that it's used responsibly by both the student-athlete and the universities. Leave it there?
Yep. Okay. That's all we can.
I got you, brother. Gary Sheffield will join us coming up next. Former big league star, sick bat speed analyst. We'll talk with him about some of the early trends of the season. That's next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network back. So we're going to transition from some of the sobering numbers in terms of getting scholarships, and obviously that was born out of the initial jump-off point of the transfer portal for both basketball and football, which is overcrowded, and there's going to be some residual drain on not just college players who kind of get left without a ride or a seat, but also high school players. That's It's a very interesting time in college sports for sure. But, Teague, let's get to the diamond, man. Baseball is a couple of weeks in. There have been some great stories. Ronald Acuña is basically batting 500. Otani's been insane. Red Sox are a lot better than I thought. I mean, there's a lot of good stories. And we're joined by a guy who, just bat speed. I've never seen somebody swing a bat as fast as this guy. Everybody who knows the game knows that that's true. Gary Sheffield, 9-time All-Star, won a championship back in 97 with the Marlins, bunch of silver sluggers, a batting title, and one of the fierce competitors and just absolute mashers in the game. And we got Sheff back with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Gary, how you doing today, buddy? What's happening?
I'm good. How you guys doing, man?
We're doing great. We were trying to get you yesterday for Jackie Robinson Day, but good to get you. And by the way, all the teams that didn't play yesterday are celebrating it today. So we could certainly get into that point. You know, the numbers, Gary, and it obviously didn't impact you because you made it and you played. But the numbers in the 70s and the 80s, it was right around 20% African-American. The Jim Rices, the Dave Winfields, and, of course, guys like yourself, et cetera, Dwight Gooden. And then it changed, right? It changed dramatically. It dipped to about 7, 8, 9%, more Asian players, more Hispanic players. But the African-American player does not have great representation in the game. There's a lot of theories as to why. I don't know if anybody could give us a better answer than you. Why the drop-off, and how does it change, or will it change?
Well, during my era, you had some superstars that wouldn't step up, that was on top of the game. I was a player that speak about things that happens over and over, and it has to be something that you know to be true, because before you put yourself out there, you want to be factual, and you're not being outspoken and speaking about things just to cause problems. You're doing it because it's a concern of yours, and so I was one of those few guys that would speak out on certain things, which my life was going great. I was getting my contract. I was putting up my numbers. But, some guys are just satisfied with, getting theirs and not worrying about the people that was before them and coming after them. So we had a lot of that going on, and it's still going on.
Yeah. How do we change it? Yeah. Like, how does that change? Like, you're not playing now, so you can only do so much. How does that change? How do those numbers get back up to where they were in the 70s and the 80s?
Well, the number one, you can start advertising and marketing more African-Americans and start putting us in a positive light. Anytime you're talking about today's millennials and they see negativity, they go the other way, because they're instant people, they're instant results, and they want to see an easier path. And so when you have that, Major League Baseball probably does the worst job and marketing the game the way it should be marketed, and because the game is for everybody. You look at NFL, you'll see, advertise everybody who has a charity. You see them on TV and United Way, and you will see a lot of different African-Americans doing positive things. You'll see the NBA, they're running their own game, the athletes.
Yeah.
But in Major League Baseball, they keep it the same.
Yeah, no, I've always thought that, Gary. When you look at the lack of social media interaction with Major League Baseball players, the lack of like marquee matchups. They don't do those promotions like this guy versus this guy. Not that it's not a team game, but that just gets your interest and makes you more, inclined to want to dive into it. I think the next logical question becomes, when we think about African American players and, the other sports that they gravitate to. Is there a way to make baseball feel cool and fast and immediate? We know how great the game is. That's not what I'm talking about, so don't get that misconstrued. But like, you watch a basketball player or a basketball game, and it feels like action-packed and filled. How can you – there's no really way to change that with baseball, is there?
Well, it was that way when I was playing. They implemented all these rules now, and they've changed the game so much to they're making it more hitters friendly, even without having success. These guys can go out there and strike out 180, 190 times, and it's okay. And then all of a sudden they show a home run. Now a home run is less appealing. When a home run was a big deal and it was more appealing,
yeah,
because it wasn't happening as often as it is now. So, you know, if they would have told me or Barry Bonds or any other great player, all you have to do is go out and hit home runs, we'll have a million of them, you know. but your batting average is going to be 250, and you're going to strike out. After you retire, it looked on your resume, you struck out 10,000 times. You know, I played 22 years, and I probably barely have 1,000 strikeouts in my lifetime. And, you know, and when I see a popular player that everybody gravitate to, he's the face of the team, face of the city, and he has 100 strikeouts in April. And so when I see stuff like that, you know, I'm not one of those older players that scoff at the game, and talk about the game in a negative light. I just speak on facts. But what I do is I meet these kids where they at. That's the way the game is played today. That don't mean I have to watch it.
Yeah.
Wow. I talked to Gary Sheffield, and you didn't have a million home runs, but you had over 500. And to your point about not striking out a whole lot. I mean, I knew you made consistent hard contact, but I didn't quite realize that you struck out as little as you did. How about this, Teak? You go back to – he's with the Padres still at this point, so it's his fifth season at this point. Yeah, fifth season. Finishes third in the MVP race, right? Bats 330, leads the league. Leads the league in total bases, 323. And, again, we've all seen Gary swings violently. Yeah. He's looking to put a hurt on the ball. 33 bombs, 100 ribbies, 40 strikeouts in 618 plate appearances. I knew it was good. I didn't know it was that good. Well,
let me
give
you one better than that.
Let's hear it.
I just did a special with Alicia Gwynn, Miss Tony Gwynn's wife.
Yes.
And she came down here and did a story. It's coming out soon.
Okay.
And when you see this story, it's going to blow your mind. She reminded me. She said, Gary, you know what you and Tony did in 1992? I don't think a player has ever even done this, or nobody ever heard of this.
Okay.
I said, what is that? She said, you know how many home runs you had, right? I said, yeah, I hit 33. And she said, you won a batting title with my husband on the team. I said, yeah, I was on his team. I was on his team.
Yeah.
And she said, no. My husband, when they traded for you, my husband was sitting there watching the TV and jumped up for joy, like the best thing that ever happened to him. And I was like, for real? She was like, yes. He wanted to be teammates with you more than you know. I said, wow. She said, but I'm going to give you a stat that nobody ever talks about. And then she said, you hit 33 home runs and won the batting title when my husband had won 6 or 7 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you won the batting title with him. You know how many times y'all struck out combined?
How many?
47 times.
I mean, that's I mean, listen.
She said 47, 57, something like that. Because you say I struck out 40 times, right?
Yeah.
You know how many times Tony Gwynn struck out?
7?
Eight?
Year. Yeah, 8.
Look it up.
I got to look it up.
Time. Well, you know what's crazy, Chef? And by the way, all those hitters, I look at my – now, I was a lefty hitter, right? So most of my favorite hitters of all time are lefties. Mattingly's my all-time – Mattingly, before he hurt his back, was as good as anybody. So Mattingly, the great Tony Gwynn, I love George Brett. I love Wade Boggs. Those are my four favorite hitters of all time. And all those guys put the bat on the ball. I don't understand. Like, see, the problem is, if there's no penalty, the lowest level of the minors, it's, you know, you're not going to get benched if you have 3 or 4 whiffs or you're expanding the zone. So until there's no incentive.
Yeah.
To try to stop striking out.
Gary, by the way, you gave him one too many. He struck out 16.
That's 16. 16 times.
How many at bats, T?
He had 520 at bats.
That's amazing. Yes. He was the best.
That's insane.
Yep.
But like Tiki asked me, what would make the game more appealing?
Yep.
Well, when you look at the action part of the game, there used to be bunting, and the fast guy gets a job, and he can make it in baseball, you know, because he was fast. And
that's why
bunt.
I thought I could play, Gary. I was like, dude, I can bunt. Well, I can get on base.
You could have in my era.
Yeah, it's true. I couldn't hit home runs.
You didn't have to in his era. That's the point. You could have just ran.
When you see all of these actions, that action was going on in the game, the bunts, the taking third when the ball is hit right at the center fielder.
Yep.
He's on first, taking third. Then the big guy drives him in. everybody had a role and everybody was just as important on that team because they knew their role. That's what made the game sexy and appealing. Baseball, naturally, is not an appealing game over basketball and football because it's action-driven all the time.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
It's more strategy in baseball, but those are the little things that can make the game sexy again.
Well, now, I want to go back to some, talking to Gary Sheffield, 509 home runs, nine-time All-Star, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. About 4 or 5 minutes ago, you ended the statement with, but that doesn't mean I have to watch it. So are you saying that you don't watch baseball at all?
I don't watch baseball at all. After I was kind of forced to watch baseball,
yeah,
because I was working with TBS,
yeah,
and so I had to remember who was, you know, really find out who are these players,
yeah. Got it, so the job.
I'll tell you the secret now. I never watched the games during the season. I would get educated on it when I get there.
Really, you dislike it that much, huh?
It's not something that I can watch based on what I'm seeing, because I'll be a complainer.
Yeah, I hear you.
Not even highlights. You won't even put on MLB Network and watch like Quick Pitch and, you know, see the all the highlights. Not even that. Like nothing.
Nothing.
Wow, yeah. Man, that's disappointing, Gary. Yeah. I mean, I get it.
This is the first time I ever said that out loud. But I'm just truly disappointed in what I watch.
Do you think it can come back, Gary? Do you think there's a manager out there or an organization that can, I don't know, start doing things differently and making it more like it used to be? Like, man, that team is fun as hell to watch. Like the Royals, for instance, when the Royals won the World Series, the year before they won and the year they won, they were actually a pretty compelling team to dig into because they small-balled it sometimes. You know what I mean? They didn't hit 400 home runs a year.
You're asking a really, really good question, and what you're saying, you're onto something. But Theo Epstein walked away from, you know, general manager position because he's the one that pretty much started all this sabermetric stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he was big, and Billy Beane did the whole money ball things, and he looked for on-base percentage. But really, Theo Epstein he dove so deep into this, not analytics, then took over the game. And I think a lot of these managers, the way they used to manage games and the players they was looking for, they're no longer looking for those players now because you couldn't get a job as a manager if you wasn't into this stuff.
That's true.
That's a good point.
And so now you're putting really good managers that's been under the Jim Leland's, that been under the Tony La Russa's, that had the tutelage to manage a certain way. They're no longer they can't manage that way anymore.
That's true. You're a puppet. I mean, a lot of times the lineup is pretty much given to you. Mm-hmm. The bullpen, you know, arms, the way they're brought in, it's kind of laid out before a series, before a game. I get it. Gary, there's a lot of things. Listen, I mean, there's a lot of things about the game that bother me, too. I've said many times to Tiki, I mean, man, how many times do you see a guy hit a triple, number one? How many times do you see a guy – think about this, Gary. To me, the most exciting play in baseball –
the park's too small to do that.
That's true, too. But, Jeff, to me, the most exciting play in baseball, and I've said this a million times, man on first base, right? Bullet in the gap, like a one-hopper to the wall, right? Left fielder or right fielder gets it. Cutoff man is out. Boom. He delivers a strike to the chest. Shortstop turns, fires a bullet to the dish. Boom. Bang, bang, play at the plate. Guy from first base. You don't see that anymore.
Because the fields are too small and everybody plays deep.
Yeah.
Because the baseballs are hard. By the time that ball is hit, you don't have time to run it down anymore. I don't even see that anymore.
It's true.
As a player.
I never thought about it, but you're right.
It's true. You know, if Tiki watches a football game and if a guy makes a run and breaks three tackles, only Tiki know how difficult that it is to do. He know how what it took for him, that player, to do that.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
I see a guy hit a home run, and I played in a certain stadium, and I see the swing. I know it's not a home run swing.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Makes sense.
I feel you.
Makes
wow.
A lot of sense. Chef, Gary, this was money, man.
Yeah, I wish we had more time. We unfortunately don't. We're pretty much up against the end of the show, but not the conversation I necessarily thought we would have, but a very, very interesting one nonetheless. Thanks for being candid with us, man, and good having you back on the show.
Absolutely, man. Anytime.
Appreciate it, Gary.
Gary Sheffield. Awesome. Whoa.
Yeah. He's right about that, though. You know, I can see what he's saying. That guy hit that ball, swung, whatever, you know, made contact. That's not a home run, and it's 430 feet.
It's 13 rows back, the opposite field.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear you. I got you. All right, update from ACK, the blast, wrap up an awesome day and an awesome week. Here's ACK's update. All right, Tiki and Tierney here. Starting to wrap up what's been a really good day, a really exciting day, a really fun day here. We're going to get to our Ask the Pros question, and brought to you by our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts, coming in from Utah. Corey wants to know here, Teague, so if Donovan Mitchell is out an extended amount of time, what does it do to the West playoff race? By the way, the MRI is negative.
Yeah.
But that could still be a high ankle sprain, and that can still shelve you for a long time. Won't you
take
it,
I'm going to say it's going to limit their ability, especially to get deep if the Lakers get healthy, because think about where the Lakers might fall to without LeBron and AD until the playoffs. They could end up having an early matchup against the Lakers without a healthy Donovan Mitchell. That's a bad sign for the Jazz.
Can't deny that. I mean, they need him. Even if they have him, there's no guarantee they're going all the way. Even though they have a terrific coach and a terrific record, and the team allocation in terms of roles might be as good as any in the NBA, but no Mitchell, no Spider, no Chip, that's for sure. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts. All your car care needs, guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Tiki and Tierney, wrapping it up. Been a great day, man. Been a lot of fun.
It has been. Did you see Jimmy Boeheim is joining his dad and his brother Buddy?
No.
Jimmy Boeheim was averaging 16 points and 8 rebounds or so at Cornell.
Did not see
but
that.
The Ivy League opted out of the season, and we know this. And he graduates this spring. So he has a year. He's going to Syracuse. So Jimmy's going to join his brother.
Jimmy Buckets.
Jimmy Buckets is going to join Buddy Buckets to play for Daddy Buckets. It's kind of an awesome little story.
But how do you spurn your dad initially? Maybe dad didn't want him. Maybe dad said you're more Cornell and maybe not ACC.
It's interesting. Maybe he just wasn't good enough.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but he developed into a pretty good player, and he's going to play his last year for his dad, and Buddy's staying. He's not going pro, so.
I'm sure he can shoot.
That's pretty cool, man.
That is very cool. Just a guess, T. You ready to bang in a few blast ones here? See what we got?
Let's do it.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Tiki, former Bears Super Bowl winning quarterback Jim McMahon threw a little shade at his former team. He joined Fat Mike Chicago Sports Show.
You know, the Chicago's always been known for their defense, right?
Yep.
Their defense and their running game. And that's probably all they're ever going to be known for. I think it's where quarterbacks go to die.
Okay. So are the Bears quarterback issues an organizational philosophy problem, or have they just had bad luck, bad scouting?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. Certainly bad luck. I mean, Jay Cutler wasn't thought of being that bad until he got there. Mitchell Trubisky was just a miss. That was bad scouting and bad assumption that they made on a kid who only played limited time at North Carolina.
Yeah. Rex Grossman. Super Bowl, got him there.
Yeah, got him there.
Loosely got him there.
Yeah, exactly.
He was the quarterback on a team that went to the
it's
Super
Bowl. It's hard to argue with what he's saying.
Yeah, I know.
I know. I think it's more bad luck than anything.
I kind of lean with that as well, with that. I mean, I do believe that there's star carryover. Organizational dysfunction leads to losses, but I don't necessarily believe that an organization can directly be bad at just a specific position. You know what I mean? There's reasons why, like, the Browns hadn't won until recently and why the Knicks have been in this 20-year hellhole and some other teams have been buried because the people making the decisions make all the bad decisions about everything. Not the proper infrastructure, right? But when you look at a specific position, especially the quarterback spot, I think it's probably more bad luck and, you know, some other circumstances that were probably neglected, but bad luck's a big piece of the equation. Top tackle, prospect Penei Sewell, training at both left and right tackle. So how difficult is it for a tackle to switch sides? Well, I don't know, but I would from what I've heard, it's certainly a lot easier going from left to right. What they like to do with certain players, though I don't think Penei Sewell should be one of these players. There was a thought he should be the number 2 pick in the draft at one point.
Yeah.
This guy's not bouncing to the right side unless he went, like if the Jets would have drafted him at number 2, which they won't, and you had Mekhi Becton on the left side for the previous, that's different. Then you just build 2 bookends and you figure it out down the road, whatever. But to go from to be a left tackle in college, start on the right side, that's an easier transition for most, and then to go back to the left side.
Yeah, I mean, it's not fully different skill sets, but you know, one of the best that ever did that for me when I was playing was David Deal, who played everywhere. He was tackle right and left, and guards both right and left. So
yep,
that versatility is important. I think the difference is most teams are right-handed, meaning the quarterback is right. So your sets have to be precise, and you have to keep the edge rusher wide to keep that pocket more contained as a left side tackle. As a right side tackle, interestingly, you often have to be more of a run blocker sometimes. So it's the same skills, but it's a little bit different how you kick set with your left foot back versus your right foot back.
There you go. All right, last night, former first overall pick DeAndre Ayton dropped in 26 points, had 11 boards, and the Phoenix Suns went over the Kings. Now, Ayton is averaging a career worst. He's only been around a few years, so put it in perspective, 15 points a game. But his field goal percentage has jumped from 55 to 63. Has Ayton been a disappointment thus far in his career, and what is his ceiling?
I mean, it coincided, and in some ways, this was the 2015 draft. Yeah, 2015 with, I don't know, like the
no, he wasn't 2015.
17, I'm thinking, right?
No, he was, let's see, what is it?
When did we have him? We talked to him.
That would have been the 2019 draft.
Was it 20? Yeah, it was. No, that's not.
It wasn't 27. It was either 2018 or 2019.
Whatever it was.
The year they lost to Buffalo, the 5-12 matchup.
The big man, yeah, exactly.
Could have been around a couple of years.
18 then, 18, because yeah, he lost the same year that Virginia lost. So at Arizona, that year around that time was when the big man, like the old school dominant big man that you needed, the Clint Capellas of the game,
yeah,
they were becoming less relevant. And so disappointment, I'm going to say no. I think it's just the game changed a little bit and his skills aren't as developed. Remember we talked to him at the at the NCAA tournament.
We had him at the Final Four.
At the Final Four.
We had him on our set.
And we asked him, like, what do you need to work on?
Jump shooting, he was telling us.
He was like, I need to become a better jump shooter.
That's what he told us.
I got to start shooting three-pointers.
I remember.
Maybe he just hasn't developed it.
Okay, we're kind of burying the lead here. DeAndre Ayton's had a terrific season. His PER is almost 21
mm-hmm.
for a team that has a chance to really win something.
That's why I'm saying it's not a disappointment.
But I'm a little surprised at the question. He's averaging 15, 11 points. His PER is 21. Now, I mean, if you're expecting, you know, Tim Duncan out of the chute from Wake Forest, then I guess you're a little disappointed. David Robinson, Ewing.
Yeah.
Ayton's really good.
Here's another point.
He's good.
CP3
yep.
and Devin Booker are getting all the shots.
That's true.
That's why his numbers are coming down.
Bingo. Hey, listen, we want to thank everybody. So many people went out of their way today as we celebrate 4 years on the Tube, which is great for us. Teek, you know I love you as your partner.
Most
you know I
love
you as your person too, buddy, man.
Likewise.
Great stuff so far.
Have a great first game this weekend, brother.
Wait, everybody have a great weekend. Safe, sensible, sane. We'll see you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.